Welcome back to the Mac in the Middle podcast after another Sunderland League game, this time straight after an international break. And it's back-to-back defeats for Sunderland after what was a controversial loss against Middlesbrough before the international break. And you could argue the same in this game as well. 2-1 away to Stoke. We'll get into what happened during the game, some of the decisions that went against us, some of the decisions that potentially went against us, and a very unwanted statistic and record as well, which we'll get on to. But just a poor game, poor result, straight after an international break. Like I say, two defeats in a row now, Michael. So, you know, have to get Tuesday is the next game, of course. Leicester away, and they are very much comfortable at the top of the table, so it's not going to be an easy one. But you have to do what it takes to make sure it's not three defeats in a row.
Yeah, well, it's funny how the tide turns, isn't it? Because if you rewind back to the podcast we did, I think, before after Sheffield Wednesday, I think it was, then it's funny how the mood can completely change based on a couple of results. But, I mean, as far as yesterday goes, or the weekend by the time this goes out, I suppose there is an element of controversy about it with the first goal, so I'll try not to talk about the overall incidents too much yet. But, yeah, it wasn't... I'm someone who didn't think the performance yesterday was as bad as a lot of people thought, a lot of people said it was, but I'm not going to pretend it was good or anything, because it wasn't. It was just a bit flat in some areas, but, you know, Leicester away, I mean, I remember something I think we said after the Cardiff podcast, when we lost to Cardiff, that probably one of the best games you could have is Sheffield Wednesday away, if you want to respond. This kind of feels like the opposite. One of the worst games you want, if you want to break out of a duck, is Leicester away. And Leicester, I mean, you look at the quality they've got, they've comfortably at the top of the division, and it goes without saying how difficult Tuesday is going to be, certainly. And but you know, that's the challenge we're going to have to face if we want to avoid the third defeat in the row.
Yes, and also we'll get on to that game a little bit towards the end, but straight into the Stoke game, because 1-0 down very early in the game, and obviously after the Middlesbrough game, we talked about the refereeing and, you know, what happened, the red card, the offside goal decisions in general in that game. PGMOL came out after that, apologised for, you know, the referee ultimately spoiling the game. Don't want to say it cost us the game because the performance was crap anyway, but certainly influenced the result in that game. And I would not be surprised if you hear a similar story at some point this week, because the first goal is as a result of, I don't know who it was that scored it, but the ball comes into him, hits his arm. Anyone can see that. He controls it with his arm and scores from it. And again, it's one of them things where, yes, Sunderland should have defended it better and certainly could have defended it better, but it's another game, ultimately, that, again, not taking anything away from the performance, because Sunderland certainly could have been better, but it's another one of them games that has been decided by a poor refereeing decision.
Well, this is the thing. I mentioned this after the Borough game. We don't want to mention referees. I mean, I'm just looking at it back now, just for context. And at first, I wasn't so sure what was as wrong with it. But when you look at it back, yeah, it is blatantly obvious. It hits the upper side of his arm, and that's handball. And while I think the defending could have been better, you know, I think it's Ryan Mee. I think it's M-M-A-E-E that he's pronounced. I'll just say Mee. But, you know, like he's able to control the ball with his arm. And actually, bear me a minute. I want to check to see how far away the referee... See, the referee is some way away from it, but could the linesman not have seen it? But either way, it's just, like we've said loads of times, and we mentioned this point after Borough, that it's going to come to a point where teams are going to be severely costed because of inadequate decisions from officials. And I've started to notice this as well. I think the referee, correct me if I'm wrong, was it Craig Paulson yesterday?
It was, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to have a check to see who it was. No, it doesn't say. But anyway, no, it seemed to me like the worst referees are the ones who come down from the Premier League, because I'm pretty sure Craig Pawson,
it's the referees who are able to rely on other referees correcting their decisions.
There you go. That sums it up. I mean, I'm just looking at the BBC match report to try and find it. But yeah, Craig Pawson is definitely, I'm sure he's a regular in the Premier League, and VAR will essentially, like with a lot of other... No, sorry, it was Graeme Scott who the referee was. But either way, the point stands. The ones that come down from the Premier League who are basically too crap for the Premier League, and where VAR bails them out some more times than not, they don't have that to rely on in the Championship and below. So it means then that they've got a more emphasis is put on their decisions. But as a result of this incorrect decision to disallow a handball goal, you know, the game could have been different, because you can't just completely blame the referee all the time. But this, it's evident, it's blatant. You know, like I said before, I'm always sick of this culture where if you lose a game but you didn't mention the referee, then automatically people assume you're just saying it because you got beat.
It's not the only decision as well that very heavily went against us, and there's also another one in the game that arguably, I don't want to say changed the game, but could have changed the game. So obviously we'll get on to them as well. But luckily Sunderland did equalise pretty much straight away. I think it was approximately 3 minutes after Stoke took the lead that Sunderland did claw one back to make it level again at 1-1. It's Jack Clark who gets the goal again. And I think that's him up to...
It's eight goals for the season.
Yeah, 8 goals so far this season in 12 games, 12 starts. I think we said this before, but I think you got 9 last season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I want to say. I think you did. I'm going to try and research that, but carry on.
Yeah, so, you know, it's good. It's a good goal. Bellingham, or Job, as he obviously prefers to be known as, he picks up the ball kind of deep in, well, very early in their half, drives forward, forces their keeper into a save, and it's, you know, a very simple finish for Clark. But ultimately, it was a good chance, a good time for Sunderland to equalise, because, you know, when you concede so early on into the game, things can very quickly, you know, change in favour of the team that have taken the lead. So to get that goal back straight away, granted, didn't really do much in the grand scheme of things, but to equalise after 3 minutes, after going behind, is, you know, usually a good thing to do.
Well, exactly, because it proves then that you can respond to adversity to some extent. I mean, I felt that yesterday Sunderland missed a great opportunity to turn Stoke's crowd against the players, because the atmosphere, I mean, everyone knows my thoughts on Alex Neil, but the point is a lot of their fans really aren't enamoured with him, and I imagine probably still aren't, despite yesterday's result. So the point is, the atmosphere could have turned really quickly, and I think Sunderland didn't capitalise that enough. But the point I was going to make was, equalising so quickly, and I said this when I was watching it by lovely legal means, I was saying at the time that, well, actually, equalising so quickly hopefully turns the crowd, gets the crowd on the players back a bit more, and that will suit Sunderland in terms of atmosphere, so that we can then go and press and play our game and win. So although it didn't amount to anything in the end, at the time it did feel huge to equalise as quickly as we did, because it's back on a level playing field again, and you can make Stoke more nervous to try and go and get the win, which is just a shame it didn't amount to much.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously that was 10 minutes, that's 1-1. John's with us now, I think. In terms of, you know, it's a weird performance, I think, because obviously when you lose a game, usually you want to say the performance isn't good. And I don't think it was a good performance, but, you know...
I don't think it was a bad one either, personally, if I'm honest, but maybe that's...
Certainly not as bad as some people would make it out to be. Yeah, and, you know, you see people saying that, oh, if you play like that, you're never going to get top six. And I mean, probably, yeah, I agree. But when was the last time we played like that? You know, we were poor. Interestingly enough, played without a striker, despite having 3 on the bench. But whilst the performance wasn't terrible, there were still a lot of things we needed to iron out, especially in that first half, John, that we just didn't really manage to do.
Yeah, I think it was a. It's always a weird one after international break, and we've got a lot of players away. You know, I think that's why he went with the selection he did, saying that, you know, he's been able to sort of build up, you know, with the players he's had at training, and that seemed to be, you know, the way we went. But, you know, it just didn't work. I think Alex Neil's got our number at the moment. You know, Stoke are an absolutely turgid team. You know, say what you want, but I wouldn't want to watch that every week. And, you know, we've watched some crap football in our time, but that was awful. But they still managed to do a job on us. I think the frustration for me is we just didn't really do the basics of settling down, keeping the ball. We seem to play as if we're playing with a striker trying to hold the ball up, but we didn't have that. You know, we're playing with Roberts, who's not going to be able to hold the ball up, nor is Pritchard. So we need a presence up there. And it was, for me, it was especially the first half, was just a little bit like, ugh, just can we keep the ball, you know, conceded at a really bad time. I think they were probably on top when we conceded, you know, their first sort of opportunity. But yeah, it was a few weird performances, probably missed Dan Neil as well. But yeah, we didn't do the basics in just keeping the ball, rinse, repeat. And yeah, I think that's probably what set the tone for the rest of the day, unfortunately.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, we'll get into the rest of the game a little bit as well, Michael, but it is obviously the second time we've played Alex Neil since he left. Obviously, 5-1 defeat back in March of last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did a bit of research into it before the game started early in the week about Sunderland's record against ex-managers, and it's 22 games now, dating back to about 2006, that we faced an ex-manager. And of those 22 games, we've won 4 and lost 14. And I think people said this the first time we lost to Alex Neil, and it could be a similar story after the second defeat to Alex Neil as well. But did Sunderland, not just Sunderland, but, you know, the players, certainly the ones that were here under Alex Neil, and obviously Tony Mowbray having took over from Alex Neil, somewhat overthinked, is that the word? Overthought is the right word.
Do you think
you
mean they made too much of the fact we were playing?
Yeah, they made too much of the situation, of the circumstances, and, you know, played too much up to it. Whereas Alex Neil's almost just looked at it as, you know, another game, and that's ultimately why he's got the better of us over two games.
You could certainly argue that. I mean, you can definitely argue that for the first game, for the 5-1 last season, because I think the crowd certainly at the Stadium of Light last season, probably, and I'm guilty of this, made it about the fact Alex Neil came back and really wanted to beat him because of that. Me personally, I think you could argue we did, but I still felt that across the game, we still deserved to get something out of it, even though we were that great. Because John's right. I mean, I thought Stoke were turgid. I really didn't rate them at all. I think they just showed a bit more physicality, but I suppose that's an issue we have to solve. But with the Alex Neil debate, I didn't know those stats until you've just read them, how poor we are against ex-managers. So maybe we'll just write off the game at the Stadium of Light and just concede Stoke are probably going to win that one and all, unless he goes. But for me, I'm personally, I mean, as you guys know, I'm probably one of the biggest haters of Alex Neil. And you might think I'm probably more angry with the fact we've lost to him again. But in a weird way, I'm not, because I said it in the chat in the build-up to the game, I thought we would get beat just because of him. And I think the fact I expected it probably makes me less annoyed. But it's, yeah, you could argue the players certainly did, but I don't know. I still felt that the performance overall should have merited a point, but maybe that's me saying it in a biased sense. But there's no denying, John is right. Alex Neil twice now has faced us, and he has got a number on us both times. And it's one of those where, and I will say this to Alex Neil, mind, and forget my feelings towards him, he seems to be extremely lucky at Stoke, because whenever he's on the brink of having a lot of pressure or getting the sack potentially, he pulls a result out of his backside to keep him in the job for another couple of weeks. Yeah. And he did it a couple of weeks ago against Bristol City, and he's done it here as well. So we'll wait and see with that one. But as far as Sunderland go, yeah, whether we were playing Alex Neil or who not, we still needed to have asserted our authority a lot better.
Yeah, I've been very statistical at here as well. So another one for you is the last 13, well, prior to this game, the last 13 international breaks, the game following the international break, we had won 10 of them.
Out of how many?
13.
Wow.
So it's now 10 from 14. So we're usually pretty good the game straight after an international break. Obviously not so much this time, because Stoke in the second half, John, pretty early on in the game, end up making it 2-1. And although you can question the refereeing decision for the first one, don't think you can question much aside from Sunderland's defending for the second one.
Yeah, again, you know, Stoke will say it's a good goal from their perspective. From our perspective, we'll say it's, you know, it's a terrible goal to give away. I thought the defence, for some reason, looked really, really shaky. Maybe apart from, I think, Huggins and Ballard seem to be the more assured ones. 09 looked a bit rusty for me, and I'm not sure about Trey Hume at left back. Yeah, it's just one of those where you just like, just don't concede, you know. It's a really horrible time, because it gives them something to hold on, you know. It gives their, whatever the crowd was yesterday, it gives them a little bit of a lift, you know, for the 7 that were there. It's, yeah, just a horrible time horrible time to concede. And like I said, it sort of sets the tone, you know, barring a few changes a bit later on that maybe give us a tiny bit of impetus, not too much. Just stupid basic, you know, errors that we can cut out to stop conceding stupid goals. Because if you don't concede, obviously the first one's, you know, bad from the ref, but we still, you know, they still manage to score. You know, you cut those two out, you're taking sort of a 1-0 win, which is probably a really good result in this league, despite how bad, you know, Stoke are. So cutting out those, you know, they're just giving away those stupid goals has got to be sort of at the forefront, because we know we will always be a threat going forward.
Yeah. And yes, I know we're going to go back to refereeing decisions, because there was two more in the second half that, you know, didn't. They are debatable. They're not straight up errors. One of them, I might argue, is. I can't remember which order it was in, but we're going to start with a penalty claim on Clark. I think this might have been later in the game, but I'm not sure. He gets the ball, he knocks it past, I think it's Kijana, whoever, I think that's how you say his name. And, you know, obviously there's a collision, Clark goes down, nothing gets given, Michael. It's one of them that I don't think is a penalty. A lot of people seem to think it is a penalty. I've even asked people who aren't Sunderland fans if they think it's a penalty, one of which said VAR gives that, and one of which said it isn't a penalty. So it's one of them that is very 50-50, or maybe even less than that. But again, it's one of them that you have seen given a lot and also not given a lot, because Clark has the ball. Yes, he's took a touch and, you know, deliberately took a touch away from him. He's not going to get on the end of it, but it's past the defender. The defender comes into him, takes him down. You've seen them given.
Yes, you definitely have done. I think, again, the way I try to look at it from penalty, I put it this way, the way I've tried to look at it from when we appeal for a penalty is, would I be annoyed if that was given against us? And for me personally, I agree with you. I'm going to presume that the second decision that you're on about is going to be a certain penalty appeal later on in the game, but I'll not try and ruin the pod for you, even though I just probably have.
It's going to be an interesting debate, the second one, but it's not a penalty.
Not a penalty, now. Right? Okay, then. All right. Well, there was obviously a penalty claim and penalty appeal in stoppage time, which I thought was more of a penalty than what this one was. But again, that might be my own subjective interpretation. Me personally, I didn't have a complaint with this one. I think for me personally, and again, you, John, I'll begin to keen to see if John disagrees with me or not here. I think Jack Clark was looking for that. I think he was looking for, and I know he, obviously there is enough contact, but I think Jack Clark is kind of, to me, from what I remember.
I will stop you there as well, because I want to ask this question as well.
Okay, go for it.
Flat outside the box, does it get given?
Well, given the referees in this league, I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't get given. I think, yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it. I suppose you could argue it could get given. Is it strong enough to get given?
I would say 9 times out of 10, if flat outside the box, it gets given as a foul, whether Clark has the ball under control or not. And there's so many times, you know, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but so many times you'll see where players through one-on-one with the goalkeeper deliberately takes a heavy touch past the keeper. Keeper comes out, takes him out. And even though that attack is not going to get on the end of that ball, gets given as a penalty. And it's very 50-50, well, but I think...
Let me ask you a question then. Do you think that there are different standards for what constitutes a foul in the box as opposed to outside of it?
There shouldn't be, but there is.
Okay, so bear that in mind. No, I don't think that can be given as a penalty then, because I think, for me personally, I think Jack Clark looks for the contact, and I think he looks for the opportunity to go down. So for me personally, no, I don't. I mean, again, John, you both might disagree with me, but I don't think that was a penalty. I think that would have been personally quite soft if that was given, but I'd be keen to see what you guys think on that one.
Does John think it's a penalty?
I'm probably giving it myself. I think you've got to look at it. It goes back to the consistency thing. Like, if you're, like, we have seen them given. So if we have seen them given, why is it not a penalty? You know, and like you say, if it's outside the box, is it given as a foul? Probably. I don't see any difference why it isn't. The only thing I can think is that Clark maybe makes the referee think he's looking for it. And any doubt by a Premier League referee, which I think he is, he's just going to go, nah, because he's looking for it. I'm sure the Stoke players are in the ear going, watch him, because he loves to get on the floor, you know, and he did it quite a lot, to be fair. I can only think that's putting his judgment. But ultimately, he nicks the ball away, regardless of whether he's getting on the end of it, you know, because most players round the keeper, you know, and the ball's going out of play and they're still sort of taken out. It's still a penalty. Eyes of the law, it's a penalty. But I think maybe just that hint of Clark slightly looking for it.
And the thing is, you talk about this and Michael said the same, you've said the same, Clark's looking for it. But how many fouls have you seen given outside of the box this season? I think there was one in the Cardiff game. I can't remember. But how many fouls do you see get given where, especially when a defender's in his own, you know, in his own kind of corner flag, where there's no contact, player looks for the foul, goes down, gets it. Or just anywhere else on the pitch, you see he's looking for it, but it gets given as a foul.
Exactly. All that's the time. That's
good point.
It happens all the time, and nine times out of ten, they get given.
That's where it comes back to consistency again. I think, obviously, the next thing we'll probably talk about, which is, I think it's Ender Stevens. Absolutely. Again, we're probably going to be talking, you know, consistency. Obviously, we've seen what, you know, Dan Neil was sent off for. And then you look at what's happened yesterday with, I assume you're going to touch on Stevens.
I wasn't even going to make that point, but I will make that point, because I'll come back to you on this one, Mike. How many times watching that game did someone get a foul? I think Ben Pearson did it at least twice. They've went towards the referee, questioned the decision, quite similarly to how Dan Neil did, and didn't get booked for it. I think Auchiche got booked. Was it after the Clark penalty appeal?
Possibly.
But it was after some appeal.
Stoke players did it a few times, didn't they?
And we did it, and we get booked. And that's it, consistency. Dan Neil gets sent off for it. Right, shouldn't have happened, but it's happened. Do the same in the next game. Stoke players do it, no booking. Comes back to a Sunderland player doing it, booking.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think so much as the fact that it's every time we do it, we get booked. I think, again, it's the fact that there's a lack of consistency, as you've said before. If you're going to send Dan Neil off for that, then, and you're going to give him a yellow card for that, then do it every single time a player gets in your face then. Because again, this seems to me like that some referees will give that and some won't, but it shouldn't be like that. You should be saying, right, okay, you know, if you're not going to put up with it, you have to set a precedent saying, right, if anyone does that, then you book them. That's the rules. Because then at least the referees can say, well, that's the rules. You know, that's the problem. If you don't like it, take it up with the FA. I don't know if you can really, but you get my point. You could look past the referees and go, that's the fault of the FA for implementing those rules. The fact of the matter is, for me, it seems like some referees implement the rules and some don't. And if that's the case, then again, that's why fans get frustrated, because it's a distinct lack of consistency. We've said it before, but it's a cliche, because it's true. You know, we don't like the fact that referees are constantly making contradictory decisions, and some referees give one thing and some don't, because then it doesn't feel like the game's being fair then, does it? So, I mean, look, I'm not blaming the fact we lost yesterday on the referee, nowhere near as much as I was the Borough game, because at the end of the Sunderland, I mean, the second goal, as you said before, that was not on the referee, that's purely on Sunderland's responsibility. But yeah, I mean, I swear we're never going to have a podcast these days without talking about the referees, are we? But we can't not mention them.
Granted, you're not going to have the time to do this, but if you took time out of a weekend to go and listen to every club podcast made by fans about the game in a weekend, I don't think you would listen to one that doesn't mention a referee making poor decision, because it happens in every game. You look at there was one in the Chelsea game, you know, the penalty, the handball, question marks over that. But, you know, I was just talking about this with one of my mates, and this is completely off topic, but if you remember back to the Man United Wolves game, right at the start of the season, Onana on the strikers, can't think of his name. I know his name, I'm not going to pronounce it. Do you know which one I'm talking about? I presume you do. The one where the ball goes into the box, Onana misses the ball, collides with their striker, and nothing gets given.
Yes, right? Which one you're on about.
Didn't get given as a penalty, and I'm very much going off topic here, but doesn't get given as a penalty. PGMOL come out after that game and said, we made a mistake, that should have been a penalty. Howard Webb was on Sky Sports saying that should have been a penalty. Right, correct your decision. Exact same thing happened in the Chelsea-Arsenal game yesterday. No penalty. The Stevenage-Port Vale game yesterday, I'm sure you'll have seen that clip. defender completely misses the ball, wipes their attacker out in the box, nothing given. You know, I think every single game of football that you will ever watch, especially in England, will have a decision made by a referee that shouldn't have been given. Liverpool game, Ashley Young gets sent off. Konate does the same thing, doesn't get sent off. So in terms of consistency, there just is none in any game that happens in England. And that is the biggest frustration. It's not... If a referee makes a bad decision, it's annoying. If the referee then doesn't make the same bad decision for the opposite team, it's even worse. And we'll move on to the other point I was going to make, and John knows exactly which one it is, because Ender Stevens should not have been on the pitch yesterday. And he picks up, he gets a yellow card, and what's your win? I think he made five fouls during the game, which is enough in itself to constitute as a red card, I think. It's usually after your second foul, you get booked. If you're already on a yellow and you make a foul, you tend to get booked again. He didn't. There's a point where Sunderland win a free kick, referee gives it, Stoke probably aren't happy with it. Ender Stevens picks the ball up, walks away from where the free kick was given, refuses to give the ball back to a Sunderland player, throws the ball slightly behind him, doesn't get booked, already on a yellow. I think it's Jordan Thompson, I think it is. I might have just made that name up. He does the exact same thing a couple of seconds later, picks the ball up, refuses to give it back to a Sunderland player, gets booked for it. So why is Ender Stevens on the pitch, John?
Again, we're going back to consistency, aren't we? It's that's the biggest frustration, because in fairness, the rules are the rules. You know, we can say what we like about Dan Neil, you know, moaning at the referee. In fairness, the referee thinks it's a booking, fine. But then, like you say, give us the consistency, because people are going to play the system. And in stupid games like that yesterday, where we're trying to play quick football, they know how to break it up. And Alex Neil would have said, be a knob, you know, break the play up, stop their rhythm. If you stop their rhythm, you stop them playing, you know. And to be fair, they had us all rattled just by doing those stupid little things. But on the flip side, you've got to expect, which I assume just by recognising his face, referee is an experienced referee at the Premier League. So at elite level, VAR, fourth official, he sees everything all the time. And Jesus Christ, yesterday, did he have an awful game. And like Michael said, we're not excusing the performance, because to be fair, we were below par. And so in my mind, we probably deserve to lose, barring an awful decision at the start, you know. But where's the consistency? Why are we not able to hold these people accountable and go, stop dropping your referees into our league? Don't get me wrong, the ones in our league are probably crap as well. You know, these people struggle with VAR. Just get the basics right. I can understand if, obviously, the referee has missed the handball, fine. You tell me what the linesman's doing. I think Lee Howie on commentary mentioned that there was some tackles right in front of the dugout. What is a fourth official for? You know, because you couldn't keep Alex Neil out of the box. Alex Neil was on the pitch.
That's another point to make as well. It is the fourth official, in theory, is there to, you know, add the time on at the end of the game. That's another thing that seems to just, if we want to add time on, we will. If we don't, we won't. That's another thing that seems to have gone out the window this season.
Hmm. Well, I think obviously someone's got the ump somewhere and said, oh, they can't be playing that amount of time. So again, we're back to time wasting, you know, and Stoke were time wasting on about the 70th minute. I think the goalkeeper, I don't think one word was said to him. Not one at all. It took so long. I think even Lee Howie was coming like, get on with the keeper, get on with it. But they knew to do it, to break it up. No one's in the referee's ear. The referee should know anyway, you know, to go and say, right, I'll book you. And if I will send you off for it, I will. And that's how you stamp it out. If you don't stamp it out, it will happen again, like stupid niggly fouls. Who was it yesterday? Someone who pulled our player back. No attempt to play the ball, no booking. Hang on a minute. One of our players got sent off for just questioning a decision the other week. Yeah, we got an apology. But these are things that are bookings in the letter of the law, written down. And no excuse. It's such a weird one, but if you speak to Howard Webb, he'll tell you that the percentage of decisions referees get right is like 96%. Well, yeah, okay, that's fine. And that probably looks good on a balance sheet, but look at the amount of people you're pissing off week in, week out, and apologies, and the amount of tweets they get tagged in. Very, very obvious things as well. You know, we could talk about VAR and that's opinion and those types of things, but what are the linesmen doing? You know, what are the referees doing? What are the fourth officials doing? You're a team. You know, we know they're a team. And when they fuck up, they know. Oh, well, I think Mike Dean said it on Sky, well, you're protecting your mate, aren't you? It's not about that. If you get it wrong, hold your hand up. I can live for that. If you come out and said, oh, I've had a stinker, I'm really sorry. I would be more sympathetic to the cause. But at the
moment, even worse as well, there's no accountability. And again, I'm going to go back in the Borough game for this, but referee makes mistakes. Dan Neil gets sent off when he shouldn't. It happens. PGMOL come out, apologise for the decision, says it shouldn't have been this, this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, you can shove that.
But they don't do us any good after the fact.
That Dan Neil suspension still stands. That result against Borough still stands. Dan Neil is then missing for the next game. And Sunderland lose one of their key players for the next game, even though it was the wrong decision. So Sunderland are punished for the referee making the wrong decision. What happens to the referee? He then gets given the Rotherham Ipswich game, granted it got postponed, on the Friday night. He's then on VAR for the biggest game of the weekend in Chelsea-Arsenal. So yeah, Sunderland get punished, but the referee's done.
Where's the accountability in that? There is none. Like you two have said before, and it's something that John's point about time wasting is something I've been banging on about for years and years and years at this point. If the argument is from referees as well, sorry, I know we're going off on a tangent, but we can't not with referees. They're just that shit. But the point is, if you're going to stamp out the idea of playing 8, 9, 13 minutes at a time, okay, like John said before, if a player time waits persistently, then midway through a game, book them, and if they do it again, they get sent off. That is the only way you are going to combat that and stamp it out without having to flog players to death by playing 30 minutes at a time. As you said yourself, Jarrod Gillett, you know, okay, so he gets another game in the Championship, but then what's he do? Oh, he's back in the Premier League. Like, where's the account? Like I've said loads of times before, we can't excuse the performance. And I disagree with John slightly. I think on balance, I think we deserved a point. But I think a lot of people agree with John. You can argue we did deserve to get beat. We certainly didn't deserve to win. But the point for me is that why can we never do both anymore? Why can't you mention that, okay, we have to be better, but the referee was shocking, or the officials were shocking. And I've mentioned this point on YouTube after the Borough game. What are linesmen here to do these days? What do they do? They just wave their little flag around whenever time there's a little throwing out, or every time something minor happens, but they don't contribute to big decisions. And sometimes for things that happen right in front of them. And the fourth official, as you guys have said, is even worse, because all they ever do is just hold up the subs board and the times added on at the end of the games. You know, these are things they're meant to be spotting and they haven't. So, and it's not just us. Like I mentioned in the Borough game, one clear example where we benefited from appalling refereeing helped cost Bradford their League One status when we beat them at the Stadium Light on Boxing Day, and that goal was clearly over the line and it somehow wasn't given. So these are things that are going to cost people, and you can give us all the half-hearted apologies if you want. What good does that do now? When we got the PM piss up LOL apology, whatever it is at this point, oh, sorry about the Daniel thing. Well, what good does it do now? Like you said, Daniel's suspension stands, the Borough result stands. Are we probably going to have another? Are we going to have another LOL apology from the officials going, sorry, the handball shouldn't have been given? Well, don't make these mistakes during the game then, you know, or at least make it as easy as possible for yourselves to not make those mistakes. And Josh, you've said this before, referees should be made to come out and explain their thought process behind decisions. Because I bet you now, even though some people obviously still won't be appeased for it.
I mean, granted, there's no VAR in the Championship, but every other sport that has a video assistant has live conversation, I'll say, instead of what the referees are saying. The only sport that doesn't, I think, is football. And like I said, there's no VAR in the Championship, but there's nothing stopping, you know, live coverage of what the referees are saying, what the referees are seeing, why is this not being given, why has this been given, to be broadcast. And the only reason it is because, again, the PGMOL, the FA, whoever it is that doesn't want to do it, knows how many mistakes are getting made and don't want to expose the referees to abuse. That's essentially why that's not going to happen. It's the same thing with interviews after the game. Should happen, but it won't, because they know that they will get abuse for it. And obviously there's a fine line between abuse and criticism, but, you know, if you're not going to allow criticism, because they don't even allow criticism anymore. If a manager comes out and says that was a crap decision, 20 grand fine, 3-match suspension, etc. Can't even do that anymore.
Very quickly to add on to that. But yeah, so if they're going to argue that it opens up more people to abuse, for the referees, I mean, would it not be the opposite? I think the opposite might happen personally. Now, obviously, again, some people are going to abuse, and don't get me wrong, abusing them is wrong. But I do think that if a referee was made to come out and say, let's give Graham Scott, who was the referee yesterday, let's say he comes out and says, I apologise about the handball. The action happened far too much in front of me. It was so quick, I didn't see it. If he says something along those lines, yes, some people won't buy it. But I'd probably have a bit more sympathy then, because you think, right, okay. Because remember, these referees, where I will stick up for them, they are human. Humans will make errors and will make mistakes. But if they come out and explain, look, sorry, I made a mistake, I didn't see that, blah, 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 I bet you there'll be a lot of people that will be a bit more sympathetic with them and go, yes, I'm not happy you got it wrong, but at least you've come out and admitted you made a mistake. Whereas the fact that we're not allowed to even hear from them or not, or seemingly, and again, it's one of those where there's fans on social media as well, and they can piss off with this as well, when have a go at anyone who criticizes the officials or on YouTube, whatever it is, you know, this is only going to create more animosity and make us want to criticize referees even more. So, come on, at some point, a middle ground does have to be reached here. You can, like I said before, you can do both, assess your own performance, but say, look, the standard of referees needs to be better. Here's an example for you. I've just done a preview earlier for the Leicester game, right? And Leicester, who won yesterday, and even the fan I was speaking to, who's a Leicester fan, said the referee was terrible. So, you know, right, can we get rid of this idea, please, that we only mention them when we get beat? Because that's a load of nonsense. But yeah, sorry, I needed to get that out of my system. But you're right, something has to be done about it.
It does. And obviously Leicester is the next game. That's on Tuesday night, 8 o'clock kickoff, I think it is, on Sky. The hardest game of the season, on paper, at least. But also could be one of them games that does... Certainly going to be a good game, but could be one of them games that allows Sunderland players like Clark, like Roberts, whoever else players, to have the freedom, you know, to catch Leicester on the break, on the counter, and, you know, make use of the game that way. But in terms of predictions for that game, John, what would it be?
Probably going to go for a 2-1 Sunderland. I don't know why, but I'll always back us, and I'll probably back us against a team who likes to attack us. Obviously, a lot of things have probably got to go our way, but yeah, I'll take a 2-1 win, hopefully. I was expecting a reaction from the Borough game, which we didn't get yesterday, so now I'm expecting a double reaction, hopefully. Yeah. I, to be fair, I would take a point, and I don't take a point very lightly.
Yeah. Michael?
I wonder if we get Man City in the FA Cup third round, John would back us to win even then. But fair enough. For me, right, yeah, I think, well, this isn't reverse psychology. My head does say I think we will get beat 3-1. I think, weirdly, I wouldn't be shocked if Sunderland did win this game, though, because it's one where, first of all, it's a Sunderland thing. We like to do that. And secondly, because of the championship, anyone can beat anyone. But I think Dan Neil being back, that's another key point. Dan Neil's back for this game, and I think that will... I think Stoke, as much as I didn't think we were as bad as people said we were, I think one thing that was evident, in my opinion, was that we missed Dan Neil. So I think if he comes back, and especially if he plays alongside Ekwa, you know, we're going to have luck on this game. But yeah, I think 3-1 to Leicester, but I wouldn't be shocked if we won or got a point. Yeah.
That's fair enough. Well, that's on Tuesday. We'll have a podcast out to talk about that game on the Wednesday or Thursday, discussing everything that happened in that game. Hopefully focusing on the performance of the players this time. I wouldn't either, but we'll see. That's it. That's on Tuesday. We'll get a podcast out talking about that in due course, but until then, we'll see you later. That's all, folks.